Okay.
All right. It's time to get up early in the morning. For some, 7:04 is early. For others, it's more like midday by now. Welcome back to Mark and Denise in the Mornings. Coming to you live from 860 AM WWDB here in the city of Philadelphia. City of brotherly love and sisterly affection, sometimes. In case you missed it, there was a big game last night. Told you all that they would win. You know who didn't think the Eagles would win last night? Eagle fans. That pessimism is hard to let go. I know. Come on, you guys are the reigning champs. Enjoy it. Expect to win. Believe it, and it'll happen. Again, I told you you would win. The only people that didn't believe that they would win last night were Eagle fans. So that's how Philly rolls. That's how Philly rolls. You know, set yourself up so, you know, you don't feel too bad. But Got to feel good. It was an ugly, ugly win, but a win nonetheless. Sorry about that, Atlanta. You know I went to undergrad there. I got much love for the A. But you didn't bring your A game. Neither team did, but, you know, opening day jitters. Chalk it up to that. Big day yesterday in D.C. for the AME Church. Great day. Glad to see a lot of our listening family out there. Folk were coming up to me from all over the AME Connection, saying that they tune in every day from all around the country. Glad to see that. If you want to catch any of the pictures, go to my Facebook page, Mark Kelly Tyler, on Facebook, and those pictures are public. You can see how the day was right there in front of the White House at Lafayette Square. Good prophetic day. Great witness for the church.
Well, it's ironic that the church was in front of the White House because them folks need Jesus.
Somebody, quite a few people said that yesterday. Quite a few people said that on yesterday, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a very interesting day in Washington, D.C. It was hot. Understand that it got heated as well during the Supreme Court hearings.
Yeah, I actually got a chance to watch a few of them for once because I hadn't really been able to sit down and watch the Kavanaugh hearings because I'm always running around like a chicken with my head cut off.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a few minutes yesterday to sit and particularly watch Cory Booker basically do something that's gotten him threatened with being expelled from the Senate.
Who? Spartacus?
Yeah.
Spartacus, you mean?
We'll see what
I am Spartacus. No, I am Spartacus. Mm-hmm. Did you see him yesterday?
Mm-hmm. Well, what people have to understand about Cory Booker
is a nerd.
Is that this is a dude that occasionally goes into burning homes and pulls people out.
He's so nerdy though.
And yeah, I mean, he's like Clark Kent.
Yeah. I mean, he's a cool guy, but yeah.
I mean, you got to so this behavior really doesn't surprise me much because I mean, he's kind of put his, you know, Clark Kent, Superman side off to the side for a while. But occasionally, you know, he sees the burning building and he goes and gets the person out of it. And, you know, well, first of all, we're finding out now that Kavanaugh may have lied in his previous confirmation hearings about his role in planning the Bush administration's torture policy.
Oh, really?
And various other things. And the thing is, he'll be caught in all these lies to Congress and lies to the Judiciary Committee, and he will still get confirmed because we have a branch of government that has decided that it's going to do all it can to make the party connected to it look better than it does the, you know, people who actually, you know, it's not going to follow its own rules.
Well, let's start with Booker for a moment, and by the way, folks, we got a lot we're going to cover today, including giving you a good resolution and update on John Bobbitt Jr., the GoFundMe guy here in Philadelphia, homeless veteran.
Every time I hear John Bobbitt Jr., my mind goes to a completely different place that has nothing to do with a homeless man with a GoFundMe account.
Yeah,
and everything to do with a woman who was so frustrated with her husband, she did something that every man resonates with.
Why do I remember her name? Lorena Bobbitt.
Yes. Well, you remember her name because, like I said, what she did resonates with every man who has angered a woman to the point where she is looking for something in the drawer.
No, we're not going to put that on men, okay? Any more than we would put a man who does something vile to a woman on the woman.
Well, no, and I'm not putting it on the man.
It sounded like you were putting it on the man.
No, what I'm saying is that it resonates with all of you because deep down in the back of your mind, when that happened, everybody knew that if you got with just the right amount of, you know, that any woman could decide to do this. And it happened around the same time that Fatal Attraction came out.
Again, it sounds to me like you are somehow trying to justify.
Oh no, because that's illegal.
Yeah,
that's illegal. You don't do that to people.
Unless he was in the act of sexually assaulting or raping her, what she did was unacceptable.
Yeah, it's
okay.
I'm not going to say it's acceptable.
If you don't remember, just Google the word pop it.
And it's probably better to just have you Google it, because that's a definite earmuffs kind of situation.
And put the safe search on your phone or device before you Google it, so you don't get the wrong kind of things to pop up. Pop it up. Wow.
Yeah, it just keeps going, doesn't it?
Yeah, not anymore. But listen, I don't know how we got there. Yes, John Bobbitt Jr. in Philadelphia, homeless veteran. We'll talk about that story, positive resolution. Talk a little bit about some of the other issues as well, the Nike fallout around supporting Kaepernick. The NFL season opened up. We'll get to that. Talk about Nicki Minaj making the news for donating to another person who needs some help. You'll remember him. He was on The Cosby Show. Some of you have been following the social media storm from the Elton sighting. Remember Elton, Sandra's husband, father of the twins on The Cosby Show. I mean, we talk about this stuff like they were real family. You know, it's like you kind of remember them like this was family.
Yeah, and what happened in this particular case shows you what happens when someone's actions impact everyone else. Because a lot of the folks who were on The Cosby Show were living off of the royalties from The Cosby Show, from all the places which it was shown. Because if you remember, before we discovered that Bill Cosby was the dude you couldn't put your drink down around.
Be glad he wasn't married to Lorena Bobbitt.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd have been bad.
He would have welcomed Montgomery prosecutors.
Yeah. But that show was literally everywhere. It was on Nick at Night. It was on a whole bunch of local television stations. You could find it on Hulu. You could find it. I mean, there was a time where you could not get away from The Cosby Show. And during that time, you know, everybody on the show got royalties. They may not have gotten as many as Bill Cosby, but they all got royalties. Mm-hmm. And they were probably sizable. And once, you know, folks discovered that Bill Cosby was the guy you couldn't put your drink down around, all of that went away. The only place that I know for a fact is showing reruns of The Cosby Show is TV One. And, you know, but while Bill Cosby was the target, the collateral damage is folks is the folks who were on the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk about what happened to Elton. You know, again, people, you know, sometimes people go off. They go too far, social media sometimes. We use them the wrong way. But it's actually working out good for him this morning. Mm-hmm. And again, we'll get into some more of the fallout from the anonymous letter, cover some of the Eagles game for those of you who are inclined. And
well, speaking of the Eagles game,
yeah,
the one thing that I have learned from, you know, last night's Eagles game is that if you have a morning show that you do the day after a night Eagles game and you want to make sure that you get the right amount of sleep to not need a bucket of coffee to do said morning show without sounding completely ridiculous, it's really in your best interest to go to bed at halftime.
That's what I did. I went to bed at halftime, literally.
See, I did not.
I closed my eyes. I said, you know what? This is going to be a slog. They're going to pull it out. I already know it. You know, it's going to be all good. So, yeah, that's what I did.
And I got up
this morning, and then I watched it on the NFL channel when it was no commercials and just ran right through it, caught the second half. The Philly special and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that. Oh, thank you, Regina Gray. You're right. It is Elvin. I think I said Elton. Elvin. Yes. Well, we'll get to him. And, man, just when I thought, America, you were doing so well.
When?
I thought I was not going to have to add anything to the list. I haven't been down this list in so long. We're at double X and 2X. And I thought we could leave it. We're not even going to be able to ever get to triple K. The KKK will never get to KKK.
Bet you we will.
Ah, man. I got a new one. Are you ready for this one?
Oh, I'm never ready for them, but hit me anyway.
This one comes to us courtesy of Scott Walker's Wisconsin.
This is bad already.
Mm-hmm. Here's the newest thing that you can't do while you're black.
Mm-hmm.
This goes out to all of you who have white grandmothers.
Mm.
You're a person of color, but your grandmother is white.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's you and your granny is white, you know, that happens. One of your parents is white, one of your parents is black,
mm-hmm.
you probably come out as a person of color, pretty much.
Yeah, that's generally how that happens.
Kind of like Barack Obama. He had a white grandmother and grandfather who raised him part of his life. So this could have happened to Barack. It actually could have, thinking about this.
Yeah, I'm surprised it didn't, actually.
An 18-year-old went to church with his grandmama, who happens to be white, and he's black. Along the way, they picked up her friend, another older white woman, their grandmothers. They got him in the back seat, and I got to imagine at 18, it's probably already bad enough that you're forced to go to church with your grandmama and her friend. You're 18, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's not feeling it because he's wearing a soccer jersey and some shorts. So he's just kind of like, all right, whatever, grandmother. I'm here to entertain you. Let's roll to church. Well, apparently you can't go to church with your white grandmother if you're black. Because on the way, they were pulled over by the police department.
The entire department?
Couple of cops.
Oh, okay.
Pulled him over. Took him out of the car. Handcuffed him. Placed him in the back of the car, goes back up to the granny and says, we got a report that he was robbing you. Yeah.
Okay, first of all, most robbers do not run around in T-shirts and soccer shorts because there's nowhere to put whatever it is you stole. Second of all, you know, there's probably nothing that two older white women have on them at any point in time that you might want to rob them at gunpoint or something.
No. First of all, you got to see this kid. I mean, now you're talking about the nerd. I mean, he just looks like super square. And he's sitting in the back of the police car like wondering, what just happened? Why am I over here?
Mm-hmm.
The police say that someone stopped them and said, hey, there's a car with two white ladies. There's a black guy in the back seat robbing them. That was it. Nobody saw anything. There was no gun. They didn't see anything that looked suspicious except the fact that there was a black man in the car with two older white women. And they said, now this is according to the police. This is their excuse for pulling them over. And so the police say, well, wait a minute. We want to tell you the people who told us this were black. It was a black couple that told us this. Now, the black couple that told them this never showed up.
No, because this was just you on some old Becky crap.
Yeah, pretty much. Can you believe this? The grandmother said, well, that just makes it worse. She was hot. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my grandson.
Yeah, he's lucky he didn't get hit in the head with her purse.
I'm lucky he didn't get shot.
Because, I mean.
Oh, you're talking about the police officer.
The police officer. Because grandma, an angry grandma with a big purse. You don't want those problems.
Coming from church with all that hard candy?
Yep, you do not want those problems. You do not want those problems.
Man, can you believe that?
Grandma with a purse full of Jolly Ranchers? No.
So that takes us to XX. We're only two away from going into triple letters of things you can't do while you're black.
Well, I can tell you right now with no fear of contradiction that probably by this time next month, we will be at triple letters. We will be far down in the triple letters. And we may even be at KKK. And the reason I say this is because you got people out there who have nothing better to do with their time than, you know, call the police for stuff that you really don't need to call the police for.
I mean, Denise, it's just like literally the – when you stop and just think about this, so anybody could just say so if I'm just, you know, riding down the street, if I just happen to be walking with, you know, one of my colleagues in power,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm supposed to have breakfast later with a white clergy colleague at power.
Because we are at maximum Becky, you can end up getting the police called on you and accused of attempting to rob this person. Because we are at maximum Becky right now.
Rabbi Sean, if you're listening this morning, because I know you listen to the show, if you get me stopped and arrested today, you're going to have to pay for breakfast. I'm just putting it out there. I was going to treat, but I'm just saying, if I get pulled over, and if we get pulled over and I get cuffs put on me because they think I'm going to rob you, I just want you to know you're paying for breakfast. And I'm going to get steak and eggs.
Wow.
I mean,
meanwhile, Rabbi Sean's like, what I do?
This is beyond ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is beyond, because
we're at maximum Becky right now. That is what this is. And the thing is, the reason why we're at maximum Becky is because we currently have an administration that encourages people to be at maximum Becky. And it has acolytes all over the country that encourage people to be at maximum Becky. So right now we're at a level of Becky yet unseen in American history.
Who would even believe the things on this list that people have actually done to call the police on black people all in this year? Nobody would even believe this.
Well,
I mean, it's kind of like
Becky be Beckying.
Can you see grandpa at the house waiting? Because, you know, grandfathers, fathers never go to church. Like, I ain't going to church. Mm-hmm. I'm here waiting for the NFL season to start. Not for a weekend.
Huh? Oh, and that was college football. He was probably watching the University of Wisconsin play.
So how was church? Oh, it was fine. Anything special happened?
Yeah, our grandson got put in the back of a cruiser because somebody said that he was robbing us.
What?
What? And the next thing you know, grandpa is at the police station cussing somebody out.
Probably a veteran.
Yep.
Because in Wisconsin, everybody serves.
Yeah. Now, I have a girlfriend that lives out in Wisconsin. She lives in Madison. She works for the University of Wisconsin out there. And she tells me stories like this a lot. In fact,
really?
I know her through NABJ, and I can always tell what kind of year she's had in Madison, Wisconsin, from how long it takes for her mm-hmm. to calm down when she sees me.
Oh, wow.
And that is usually after a 45-minute to 1-hour-long rant about everything that she has had to deal with being a resident of Madison, Wisconsin, that for that year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, organizations like NABJ and you know, to an extent, you know, all of the journalists of color organizations, and other organizations that are connected to people of color, those are places that you go to kind of decompress from the maximum Beckiness that you sometimes have to deal with, because it's either go into these spaces where people have an understanding of what it is you're going through and can kind of talk you out of, you know, going into your office with a baseball bat and just hitting everybody in the kneecap.
Here's the problem, though. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even like we can say, oh, this was Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
No, because, you know, in Memphis, remember, you can't go to the swimming pool with socks on. That'll get the cops called on you.
Which you shouldn't do anyway.
No,
but
they should call
that's not a punishable offense by going to jail.
They should call the fashion police, but they shouldn't call the real police.
Yeah.
You can't go in York, PA. You know, little quiet York. They gave us our governor, right? Isn't the governor
little
from York?
Little quiet York that has a white supremacist group problem.
But I'm just saying.
It has for years.
You can't go to York and golf too slow. Remember this?
Mm-hmm.
The women were had the police call on them for golfing too slow.
You know, much of this stuff has happened that it all kind of blends in and you forget the earlier stuff.
Yeah, you can't sell water in front of the Philly Zoo without getting the cops called on you. I got the list here, you know. Remember, you can't own your own store in San Francisco and try to get into it without people saying you're robbing it. You can't be superstar Ving Rhames. I mean, what did Ving Rhames do? He was at home. His own neighbor called the cops on him like, there's a big, bald, black guy robbing my neighbor's house.
And like, you don't know that Ving Rhames is your neighbor?
It's like, look, I've lived next to some people. You know, when we first moved to the city, there were a couple of Eagles players in the development we were in. So, of course, you know. It's like, man, that's, you know, Lenny Weaver lives there. Daryl Tapp lives there. You know, you got like a somebody who's like a celebrity in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You're in L.A. You don't happen to know Ving Rhames is there. Who is this person? They should have the police called on them. I mean, you can't.
Well, that answers the question, what does Marcellus Wallace look like? And the answer is apparently, I don't know.
Classic Pulp Fiction reference. That was perfect. Well done. A lot of people who haven't seen the movie are like, what's so funny? I'm looking now I got John Travolta and Sam Jackson in my head in the elevator. What does Marcellus Wallace look like? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Yeah, you can't clean up the highway in Harrisburg. Oh, man. What a list of distinguished events. Can't go shopping for school supplies in North Carolina while you're pregnant, by the way, with twins. Remember in Gretna, Louisiana? You can't wear hair extensions.
Which if you could, I mean, again.
Or a weave.
That was the Beckiest of the whole thing.
Natural hair only.
Uh-huh. That was the most ultimate Becky right there.
We'll move on. we just want to make the point. We're at double X. The newest mm-hmm. one is you cannot, if you're in Wisconsin, if you're black and your grandma happens to be white, then you can't ride to church with her. They better be glad Asa Cleef doesn't live in Wisconsin. He'd have that bullhorn ready. Isn't that right, Asa?
I hate to break it to you, but if Asa lived in Wisconsin, he'd have that bull. He'd wake up in the morning, grab the bullhorn, and walk out the door.
Well, on the route, there's a, I can't think of the guy's name, but he always turns these stories into something satirical. And it was just, just hilarious how he talked about it. He said, first of all, I doubt the police department story that there were two black people who reported this as a crime. He said, because there are not three black people in Wisconsin. One was in the car. One may have been out, but you're not going to find three in that particular community in Wisconsin.
No, probably
that's right, Regina.
Not.
You can't bury a loved one in D.C. without the priest going off on you. It's Feel Good Friday, mm-hmm. nonetheless. And Feel Good Story is John Bobbitt Jr. Mm-hmm. is getting his cash back.
Oh, yeah. To their credit, GoFundMe said, we're going to give you every dime that was donated to you because the people who set up the account basically robbed you. And I live around where this all took place, like the Trenton, Burlington County area. It's currently in Burlington County Court. Mm-hmm. And that's a very heavily veteran populated area. And you don't do things to veterans there because you don't know if the judge's husband, was stationed on Fort Dix at one time, or whether or not she's got a son at McGuire or any of those things. And, Mr. Bobbitt was a veteran. And basically they stole from a veteran. And in Burlington County, people don't like that because we're surrounded on all sides by veterans. So the folks who did this, I mean, and the thing is, if the intent was to get some money for yourself to buy a Beamer, to take all these exotic trips and all the other stuff that this couple apparently did with this money, then just be honest with people about that and say, this is what we're trying to raise money for. If we can help this guy out, that's fine. But we're trying to raise this money for ourselves because we want to, we have champagne wishes and caviar dreams. But for you to put it out there as you're trying to help another human being and that human being doesn't see any of that money, one, it kind of makes people question whether or not they're going to contribute to similar accounts because – we always have this, you know, suspicion in the back of our mind that these things are kind of bogus anyway, and this just gives you an excuse. And two, you know, that's just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's just plain old wrong, and it's deceptive. And all those people who contributed to GoFundMe to help this man expected that money to go help this man. They didn't expect you to put it in your pocket. That's not what this was about.
No, it was not. So they have been, they're going to make him whole. So shout out to Cozen O'Connor as well, you know, for standing up for him and mm-hmm. representing him so he doesn't have to pay legal fees to get it back. They're going to give him the whole $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect they're going to go after that couple to make pay back $400,000.
They already took the Beamer.
Yikes.
And they've searched the house, and other stuff that they bought with the money has been taken away too. So if you, so all of a sudden you go to a sheriff's sale and you can get like a 54-inch 4K flat screen TV for $20, that's why.
Right.
And you know something? I need to hit a sheriff's sale because I need a 4K, a 54-inch 4K television for $20.
Well, yeah. You know. I found the Who Is Marcellus Wallace clip. I just sent it to Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can hear a little bit of that before we roll out the clean part of it. I forgot it's when he's like threatening out. Mm-hmm. What does Marcellus Wallace look like?
Uh-huh. Because
I was mixing up with other conversation he had in the elevator. We was talking about Marcellus Wallace's girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
Travolta had to take her out on a date.
Yeah.
Now you got everybody. Everybody's going to go back and watch Pulp Fiction this weekend now.
Yeah.
Crazy. How do you not know who Ving Rhames is? And he lives in your neighborhood. You already know if you're in L.A., it's like, you know, Tom Cruise lives on our block.
And see, that's the thing. In you L.A., know. You trip over movie stars.
Right. People kind of have bragging rights. Oh, well, you know who lives in our neighborhood? Cardi B. Yeah, well, I don't know. We don't have any stars. We just have this big black guy up the street. Looks like he just got out of jail. No, that's Marcellus Wallace.
Well, if he were in the character he played in Baby Boy, you might be able to say that, but...
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe he's like walking around with those little house shoes on outdoors. That is a California thing, by the way.
And why is that? I've never understood that.
With socks.
Like, why are you wearing house shoes with socks with outdoors?
What are
you doing?
Such is how we roll, man. I'm not going to lie and say I never did it. You know,
that's like the West Coast version of sandals and black socks.
It is.
And it's just bad. And it's a crime against fashion.
Hey, shout out to Burt Reynolds died.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday. Because everybody kept putting on my timeline, Goodbye Bandit. And I was like, okay. Burt Reynolds, because I also had a dog named Bandit, so I was like, wait a minute, he died a while ago. But yeah, Burt Reynolds, the last thing that folks there's a couple of things folks might have seen him in. The last thing I personally saw him in was an episode of Burn Notice.
Hmm.
He played a spy who was, I guess, dealing with senility or Alzheimer's, and he was on the run from some people in his old days that were trying to kill him.
Well, you know, the interest, something that was really funny about this. So literally just the other day, you know, you start looking for something online and mm-hmm. it takes you to the next thing mm-hmm. and somehow you get to something and you're like, I don't know how I got here, but I'm watching
something. That's the beauty of online searches.
So literally, so somehow this is like about 3 days ago, I end up on with a clip of Johnny Carson, the Johnny Carson show, and Burt Reynolds is there. Oh, I know what it was. Maybe it was around Don Rickles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something related to him.
And why were you looking at Don Rickles?
Again, I don't know. I wish I could tell you, but I can't remember. Did he just die or something?
He died a while ago. I think he died 2 or 3 years ago.
I have no idea. But literally, so I get on this hilarious clip of Burt Reynolds on the Johnny Carson show with Don Rickles. I mean, that was just absolutely like, it'd make your side hurt. It was so funny. And so to have seen that, people forget the relationship between Burt Reynolds and Johnny Carson, that mm-hmm. he would fill in for him at times, and it mm-hmm. really become kind of, you know, real close to him. But Smokey and the Bandit, Boogie Nights, Deliverance, The Longest Yard, Mystery Alaska, had some pretty good hits. Then he had a whole bunch of movies he should have never made.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably had more movies he shouldn't have made.
Yeah, the clunker was strong with him.
Yeah, but if you're a guy who was born, like, in the 60s and raised during the 70s, don't lie and act like you weren't trying to be Burt Reynolds. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, he was like, he and Billy Dee Williams were kind of the personification of cool.
Yeah, he did a nude spread in Cosmo. He was the first, you know, dude that Cosmo had posed nude. And, you know, it was what it was during the time.
Hey, man, he had that, let me tell you, that car he had in Smokey and the Bandit. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to rock that.
Mm-hmm.
With the T-tops?
Mm-hmm.
Was it a Firebird or a Camaro? I think it
was a Camaro. I think it was a
Firebird. I can't remember.
But he was also in Boogie Nights.
Yeah, that was a classic role.
That was one of the last movies he was in. He was in Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
You haven't really seen him much lately.
Yeah, so, I mean, but again, so, you know, somebody said Quint the Blacksmith on Gunsmoke. Really?
Mm-hmm. He had been in the business for a long time.
Didn't know he was on Gunsmoke.
And he was also closely associated, I think it was the University of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Because he went to college in Florida, and I keep forgetting whether it's Florida State or University of Florida.
I told you it was a Firebird. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, I had a Firebird. I did. Didn't run.
Well, then you didn't really have a Firebird. You had a shell of a Firebird.
Yeah, I had an engine. Just never got it run. It was my older brother's car. He gave it to me after it didn't run anymore.
Because that's what older brothers do.
Thanks for nothing, Mike.
That's what older brothers do. Hey, you want a car?
So then I had to, like, get it towed and just, you know, disposed of his root beer brown Firebird. Classic. It's Feel Good Friday. So trying to keep it light for you today. You've had a rough week. Trust me, I know. But we will get to some of the more serious topics because we have to. 888-329-3306, 888-329-3306. We've been guest heavy this week. So for most of the day, it'll just be us and you. So if you want to get in on the conversation, we encourage you to call in. Again, that's 888-329-3306. You want to hit anything that we've talked about this week or things that we have not talked about. Gary Butler asks, are house shoes and slippers the same thing? Not in Cali.
I think that the difference between house shoes and slippers is one is open toe and one is not.
True. But I mean, so, all right. So what we would wear, I don't know if you remember, like, they were actually the house shoes. They had, like, the little corduroy. They looked like, you know, they were made for inside the house, but they kind of looked like shoes. So we'd rock those all day. But then there were people who would wear the slippers, too.
In any case.
Yeah. They were both wrong.
In any case, both were as wrong as two left feet.
Mike is crying over here.
Well, okay.
No, I'm laughing at Samuel L. Jackson watching this video back here right now.
Did you find it? Is it clean? Is it clean enough to play?
I can get you about 10 to 15 seconds.
Let's hear a little bit of it. Give us a little bit of it. This is Marcellus Wallace.
What does Marcellus Wallace look like? What? What country you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of. They speak.
Yeah, that's about as far mm-hmm. we can go. Yes. Apparently, Ving Rhames' neighbor has never seen Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But the only person in L.A., because that would have saved him, that would have saved a call on the police. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, house shoes and slippers. Yeah, you know. You remember the movie Friday? I think Cube was wearing house shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we used to rock it. Which, you know, you wear your 501s, white tube socks, and some house shoes. Pretty much all day. Why are you looking like this? You don't believe this?
Because you looked a hot mess, probably.
No, we look cool.
No, you didn't. There was nothing cool about that. Well, I'm sorry. The 501s could be cool.
Thank you.
But the rest of the outfit had to go.
501s with the sewn-in crease, by the way.
Why would you sell in a crease?
Oh, Denise. All right.
Why would
anyone Please help me
put,
on Facebook
why
Live.
Would
Please
anyone
tell her
sew
why.
A crease into jeans? Why do jeans need creasing? The same people who put a crease in jeans, sew in a crease in jeans, the same people who iron jeans.
And yes.
I question them.
No, we would take the
they
jeans.
They are suspect to me.
Even after sewing them in, you would then take them to the cleaners and get them starched.
No, yeah. No, nobody does that.
I didn't say they do it now. We did it.
Nobody should have done that. That should never have been done.
You are a military child. You are out on some base somewhere.
No, it's
you
just...
Tell me about inner city life
starch,
in the 70s and 80s. Yes.
Starch in
starch
jeans?
Them up.
No, no, that's bad. That's just bad.
I'm just telling you. That's how we used to rock it out. I'm just telling you that that's how. So, yes. So somebody probably saw Ving Rhames walking outside with those slippers on. You know, muscle T-shirt, white beater, whatever you want to call it.
And they meant to call the fashion police and instead got the real ones.
And I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm taking the garbage cans back into the house. He's robbing the house. Mm-hmm. He's using the garbage cans to fill it with all the ill-gotten gain. And I think there's a lowrider about to pick him up and take him off. And when you get done with him, officer, go to Wisconsin. Because there's a black kid in the back seat with two old white ladies. And we know he's robbing them. About to steal all their hard candy they just took to church.
Yes, we have a Jolly Rancher robbery already in progress.
See, Regina Gray is on here. She said Sergio's or Jordache had to be pressed and creased. Thank you.
They're jeans.
First of all, let me be clear. I couldn't afford Sergio's or Jordache.
Well, you obviously did not go to the right swap meet.
No, I couldn't even really afford Levi's. Sometimes, so let's be true. I had one pair of 501s, and then the rest were Lees that you would try to perpetrate and hope nobody would see that Lee on the back.
Mm-hmm.
You did not want to be caught out with Lees.
Like I said, you didn't go because the Columbus Farmers Market, the Columbus Farmers Market in South Jersey was where you went to get your Ralph Lauren polo shirts, your Jordache and Sergio jeans, and all of that stuff that you couldn't afford at Macy's or Strawbridge's or any of those places, because I don't know what truck these things ended up falling off of, but they were at Columbus and Englishtown. Like Englishtown on, I think it was Friday mornings, and Columbus on Thursday mornings. All the stuff that fell, all the designer stuff that fell off the truck, that's where you got it. And, you know, a Ralph Lauren polo shirt that people were paying like $50, $60 for in the store, I got mine for $20.
Really?
In a couple of colors.
Yikes.
And they were authentic, too. Because I would go in the store and see my polo shirt that I paid $20 for on the rack for $50. And I'm like, on one hand, I feel bad because I know that this was stolen. But on the other hand, I saved $30.
Wow. What's the statute of limitations?
Well, I think it's passed. I think it's passed because this was in the 80s.
I don't want anybody calling on you.
No, this was in the 80s. Oh, Cowtown. I forgot all about Cowtown.
What's Cowtown?
It's another town in Jersey where they have the farmer's market.
It's a real town called Cowtown?
Yes.
Or is it a nickname?
No, it's actually called Cowtown.
I'm going to pray for you, New Jersey. I'm going to pray for you real hard. But, yeah, so, I mean, you know, but, yeah, so that's kind of a, I don't know how we got into this fashion conversation. But, oh, Ving Rhames. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, again, that's, so we've added to our list. Now, you know, let me tell you. They're in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the beginning of the NFL season. So the decision by Nike to hook Kaepernick up and to prop him up and give him really a very important position within the company is being met by some as a heroic move on the part of a corporation that knows it's going to get fallout and lose business as a result. They hope that they'll get more business than they lose.
Well, their stock did go back up.
Yeah. Oh, did it really?
Yes, it did.
Ooh. I guess investors said, that's smart. We don't, you know,
and
investors.
Nike is nothing if not smart.
There you go. But of course, so they're getting the expected fallout. So there's a small school, Christian school, in air quotes, in the Ozarks. Koto, I think.
College of the Ozarks.
College. Yeah, is that it?
College of the Ozarks.
All right. And so they're done with their deal with Nike. So you won't be seeing players from Koto on ESPN rocking Nike gear.
Well, first of all, you ain't going to see players on Koto on ESPN anyway. So let's just establish that right now. Two, you know, depending on how long their deal with Nike is, you know, getting out of a contract like that is a lot harder than people think. Three, where are you going to get your athletic stuff? I mean, Russell may be able to sell you jerseys and stuff, but they don't do sneakers. And four, and this is most important, people can say that they're boycotting Nike because of their association with Colin Kaepernick, but there are a couple of things that you need to know before you decide you're going to, you know, come out your face and say that. One, that's going to severely limit the places where you can get sneakers. Because what I didn't know until all of this started happening is that Converse is also owned by Nike. So if you have a pair of Chuck Taylors that you think you're going to be able to wear to, you know, offset your protest because you burned your pair of Air Jordans. And I don't know how people burn a pair of $175 sneakers, but do you? You know, you need to take that into consideration. And secondly, while Nike signed Kaepernick, Puma and Adidas were both going after him. So there's that.
So everybody really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
well,
right.
The only one that wasn't going after him was Reebok.
Or the NFL owners.
Yeah, but, you know, then again, Reebok might have been going after him, too. They just didn't let anybody know. And three, and this is probably the most important, you're telling on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if the reason why you are burning your sneakers, which, again, $175 sneakers, you want to burn them, do you. If you're that angry because people are saying that police officers shouldn't be able to get away with killing unarmed citizens for stuff like the crime of being a 12-year-old with a toy gun, then you're telling on yourself. You are telling me more about yourself than I actually want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're telling me one of two things. You're either telling me that you think that I should be expendable because of your fear, or you're telling me that you don't mind me exercising my freedom of speech just so I don't inconvenience you. And kind of, you know, leading to that point, I was at the NFL experience yesterday, the carnival that the NFL has when it has opening night in whatever city their opening night is going to be in, because it's where the Super Bowl winning team plays. Brian Dawkins, the Hall of Famer from the Hall of Fame safety from the Philadelphia Eagles, mm-hmm. did a Q&A sponsored by Courtyard at Marriott, one of the official sponsors of the NFL. And someone asked him about the protests, about taking a knee. And I don't think she got the answer from him that she wanted necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Because when asked about, you know, whether or not he agreed with taking a knee, Brian Dawkins said, I have no problem with it. And the reason I have no problem with it is because the people who have been doing it have been following it up with action.
Well, right.
By going to Congress, by, you know, advocating for people and trying to, you know, trying to bring, you know, some light to this situation. And I think he made a good point when he said, we wouldn't be talking about this otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
This is making us talk about something that we don't really want to talk about. These protests are making people talk, and that's always a good thing. And I was like, you know something? That's not an answer I expected from him necessarily, because, you know, I've been around so many players of his era. Yes, Ray Lewis, I'm talking to you, mm-hmm. who have said some stuff that has made me scratch my head so hard I've had to stop the bleeding on occasion. So when Brian Dawkins, you know, who you would think, because, you know, he's a minister and he's really, you know, he's like one of those textbook religious people, at least to the people who see themselves as such. And, you know, when he said that, I was like, you know, that makes sense. It's forcing a conversation we didn't want to have necessarily. And, you know, if nothing else comes out of this, then you know, having this conversation and making people fess up to some stuff that we have probably needed to work on as a country for decades and didn't do, it's a good thing.
Yeah, well, so, you know, this is the problem. I'm looking at the, this is the president's statement from the school in the Ozarks, College of the Ozarks. And this is, so again, this is the real issue. And you would expect, you would hope that you get more from a college president. But President Jerry Davis accused Nike of, quote, promoting an attitude of division and disrespect towards America, end quote. Went on to say, if Nike is ashamed of America, we are ashamed of them. And then finally he says, these are the highlights of his letter. We also believe that those who know what sacrifice is all about are more likely to be wearing a military uniform than an athletic uniform. And this is the president of a school, of a college, mm-hmm. that should be teaching young people about the fact that, you know, in America, people have the freedom of speech, freedom of expression, and that just because you exercise that, it is not promoting, as he says, an attitude of division and disrespect towards America. No, it's actually, you know, one that is promoting an attitude of saying that, you know, quite the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. That, no, we want America to live up to what America promised that it is and that it says that it is. And you can't just go around saying, you know, that we're all of these things without actually putting something behind it, right? But this is the president of a college who's saying this.
Well, as the Reverend Martin Luther King said, when
these are your evangelicals, by the way, the ones you're talking about always.
Gee, what a surprise. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as Dr. Martin Luther King said, you know, the March on Washington was basically them bringing a promissory note, you know, to the, you know, bringing the promissory note that America gave to all of its citizens, and the check of freedom has been basically marked insufficient funds forever. And when you hear stuff like that, first of all, as somebody who hopes to go into academia soon, the concept of academic freedom is really important to me. And if your college president is saying what this gentleman just said, it's basically saying, okay, that I'm going to cross that off of the list of possible colleges at which I want to teach.
Pretty much.
Because the minute I walk into my classroom and I start teaching journalism and I have people look, I have people not only look at it from the view that they've come in traditionally espousing, but the view of communities that they've never been around, never wanted to hear from, and never want to hear from again, I'm going to get fired. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you sit there and you're like, you know, first of all, you have made it, you've made the point that you're going to totally misunderstand what these protests are about. You're going to get stuck on the bar ditty that is our national anthem, because let's face it, it was written to the tune of a bar ditty. And, you know, it's going to, I mean, you're sitting there and you're thinking that that is more important than the concept of what the country is supposed to represent.
Right. Right. So, I mean, so here you have it, right? I mean, this is just, but this is, yeah, I don't know. Just, you know, I have a real problem with the college president coming out this way. College presidents should be above this. Even when, you know, you're in a school that obviously is trying to promote an agenda. And, yeah, Tawanda agrees with you. She said that that check has insufficient funds.
Now, I wonder what Liberty University is doing. I wonder if Liberty University has a contract with Nike.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know what Liberty University is the college in Virginia that was founded by the late Reverend Jerry Falwell. And if there's any group of people that's probably, you know, saying no to Nike because it's un-American, it's probably them. And, you know, and I'm surprised we haven't heard from that corner of the world yet.
Well, you know, yeah. Liberty, liberty, liberty. Liberty University. What a joke. Guess what? Yesterday, Mike, you'll appreciate this since we're talking about the NFL as we get ready to go to break. So I'm returning my rental car, coming back from D.C. I'll tell you about that travel story another day. I was kind of like all over the place getting to and from D.C. for that action.
Planes, trains, and automobiles.
All of the above yesterday, trust me. I mean, really. And so I get into to Philly, drop my rental car off. Don't want to wait for the shuttle, so I cut across and go through the Marriott, that's inside the airport. Mm-hmm. Jumping on the elevator, go up to get on the R1 to come into downtown Center City.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, I pull in. So I'm walking in. I see this, you know, one of the limo vans out, and it's got NFL officiating crew. So I'm like, oh, cool. So the officiating crew is here at the Marriott. That's kind of cool. So took a picture of that. I was going to put that up, but I forgot. So I go in, jump on the elevator. Like, huge white guy gets on the elevator. And so I'm looking like, this guy must be an offensive lineman for the Falcons. I'm like, hey, man, you with the Falcons? So no, I'm with the Eagles. I'm like, oh, cool, man. Congrats on last year, you know. So you on O-line? Yeah, so we get to talking. I said, yeah, I pastor church downtown, blah, blah, blah. He said, oh, what church? I mean, obviously he's, like, definitely active with his faith because he was actually more interested in that, you know, mm-hmm. and all of this. And so I said, yeah, well, you guys have a good game. I said, but I'm actually, like, a Raider fan. He said, I played for the Raiders. He said, Wisniewski.
Oh, Steven Wisniewski.
Yeah.
An offensive lineman.
Yeah. I was like, I knew he was an old lineman because, you know, DeBrickashaw Ferguson, his parents go to our church, and there's just something about offensive linemen.
The size of them's unreal. Like, they're just
but it's their different nature. It's their demeanor, too. I mean, their demeanor is different.
Well, you're pushing people.
No, but to be as big, they're just, just really nice and respectful guys. You don't expect. I mean, you know, the mm-hmm. defense is totally different. I mean, you kind of say, that dude plays defense. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, wow. But the offensive lineman, if you met DeBrickashaw, he's like Wisniewski. I mean, huge. And when he was playing, he was like, oh, where he's, you know, built up. But you meet him, it's just like super nice, humble guys. Now, they're mean as, you know, all get out when they're playing. Mm-hmm. But when you meet them off the field, it's like totally different. And but it was just the funniest thing. My daughter was like, did you get a selfie? I said, no, you don't play for the Raiders anymore. Like, are you crazy? I had a train to catch. I'm not going to, like, miss my train. I had to get a selfie.
Well, yesterday, like I said, I was at the NFL Experience. Brian Westbrook walked by me.
Did you talk to him?
I didn't know who he was at first.
Wow.
And Denise.
That's what I felt bad
worry.
About this guy.
Oh, don't worry. Dan sufficiently chastised me. Because I was like, and I asked somebody, I said, you know, I don't mean to sound like, you know, what most people perceive a typical woman to sound about this. But was that Brian Westbrook? And he's like, yeah. I said, okay. You know, now I feel kind of like a dope because I think that I personally should have known that. But I did not know that. So,
a little small in stature, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's a little dude.
Yeah, he is.
He's a little dude.
You get around on a football field, though.
Yeah, you can. Hey, listen, we're going to get ready to go to break in a moment. I see you, Dave Liscomb. I saw Flood the Drummer's story as well today about the Philadelphia Police Advisory Commission not having complete access to body cam footage during a random audit.
That doesn't make any sense.
I'm not too surprised. I'm not too surprised. So maybe we'll talk about that when we come back. Maybe try to get Flood on to talk about that a little bit this morning. And let me just say this as we get ready to go to break. Eagle fans, be happy that you won last night and that you won ugly and that Foles didn't look great because you're probably going to avoid a quarterback controversy. That was the best case scenario, a win where Foles doesn't look good. And so Carson can come back and save the day. And Foles can go back to where he was because you, trust me, haven't been through this before. You don't want a quarterback controversy.
Yeah, the glass slipper just came right off of Cinderella.
It did. So you held on. Shout out to the defense. Because if it wasn't for the defense, you wouldn't be 1-0 right now. So, all right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation, get into a little bit more of the news of the day.
WWDB Philadelphia, 860 AM.
You're listening to Mark and Denise in the Morning on 860 AM WWDB, a part of Beasley Media. Mark and Denise in the Morning is a product of Tyler Made Media, LLC.
Mark and Denise in the Mornings, coming to you live from 860 AM WWDB. If you miss anything, if you've missed anything this week on the program, go back and check out the podcast at WWDBAM.com or on iTunes. And this show is brought to you courtesy of great sponsorship by the people of Power. Philadelphians organized to witness, empower, and rebuild. Power is the region's leading faith-based organizing effort involved in the fight for fair, adequate education funding, 21st century wage reform and transparency in the criminal justice system, climate justice, and more. Power is actively working with voter engagement and voter turnout for the upcoming midterm elections, as they are in every election. You can learn more about that work in the city, the suburbs, the surrounding center state, by going to powerinterfaith.org. Check them out. See how you can get involved. There was a very tragic killing, Shantae Tucker, this week. Trans woman of color in Hunting Park. Initially, I think people were believing that this was a hate crime about her being a trans woman. At this point, Philadelphia police are reporting that it can be ruled out that this was an act of hate, that this was not about her being trans or a person of color. They're saying that the person who did this knew her well. They actually have a vehicle that was seen fleeing the scene. And what's unusual, Denise, about this story is people in the neighborhood are cooperating.
Wow, that is unusual. Because this is usually the city of Our Lady of Stop Snitching.
Yeah. So people are coming forward, and the police believe that they're going to have a suspect soon. When they say that, they usually probably already know who they're thinking of. They're just, you know, but they want more information. So if you have tips or information about the tragic killing of Shantae Tucker, reach out to the Philly Police Department if you are so inclined.
It's just, I think that while this in particular wasn't a hate crime, we do need to talk about the fact that across the country and in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. Trans women in particular are murdered, you know, at a pretty alarming rate.
And of color.
Yes. Trans women of color in particular are murdered at a pretty alarming rate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but then again, we need to just discuss the violence that's going on in the city overall. Because, you know, every morning I get up, because I need to get my brain started when I'm getting ready to come in here so I don't sound totally stupid. And I turn on the news. And when NBC 10, which is the newscast I usually find myself watching, isn't, you know, regaling me with, you know, Eagle stuff as the official station of the Philadelphia Eagles, it almost always leads off with someone in Philadelphia or some group of people in Philadelphia or sometimes a whole slew of people in Philadelphia getting shot to death.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what we do about that. But we need to do something because it passed being out of control a while ago.
But see, a part of, all right, so this is my feeling. A part of this is that you have to take away, I mean, now there's always going to be a certain amount of violence in any city, in any town, because that's just, you know, part of what people do to each other since Cain and Abel. But when you look at a city like Philadelphia, and that's why, you know, I'm proud that Power is one of the sponsors for our program, because when we step back and you look at violence, you know, a lot of people want to isolate it and say, well, this is the problem. This is the problem. But when you get down to it, a lot of these issues revolve around, I mean, things that are totally systemic and predictable. So if you take jobs out of community and you take livable wages out of community and you prevent stability in places, and then you come back and you look at it and say, this is what was so outrageous about Jasper Williams' eulogy, right, last week at Aretha Franklin's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Is it over, by the way?
I'm not 100% sure. I'll have to check.
Did they get to the benediction?
I'm not sure.
That was a long funeral.
Yeah, the altar call may be going on as we speak.
But my point, though, in seriousness, is that what was outrageous about his sermon, where he cast all this blame on single black families and, I mean, single black moms raising boys by themselves and boys can't do it, which, by the way, was a slap at Aretha Franklin, who was a single black mom who raised four boys. Kind of ironic that you would pull that up as your main issue around your eulogy to eulogize her.
At her funeral.
Very strange. And the fact that her daddy was a single black dad who raised girls, but I guess single black dads can raise girls, but single black mamas can't raise boys. Is that what he was saying?
Well, there was so much misogyny and sexism and craziness going on in that. But he lost me at black on black crime. After that, I just tuned out.
So, right. So that's exactly where I'm going. So again, what was outrageous about the sermon, what just really got me is that when you just drop that down as though somehow black folk are just so much more inherently violent than everyone else and that can't govern yourselves and that your communities, as Trump said, are just places of hell where you can't walk to the store, to the school without being shot. As though somehow that can be said without context, without history, without an explanation of why our communities look the way they do.
Because let's face it.
Come on now.
Everything in some way is tied to economics. Racism is economic.
You sound like Bernie Sanders now.
Well, but the difference between me and Bernie is that I recognize that communities of color have particular issues
right.
that need to be dealt with, and money isn't going to paper all of them over.
There you go.
But money may not help, may not, you know, cover all the ills, but it at least can, you know, make sure you have a roof over your head, food in your belly, and clothes on your back while you're trying to get those ills straightened out. And, you know, a lot of people who are engaged in violence are engaged in violence because of how they have to make money, because no one's investing in these neighborhoods. If you invest in a neighborhood and create jobs that are good, sustainable jobs and that don't involve, you know, people having to practice unique forms of street corner pharmacy, then you don't have a lot of these problems. But it seems like the only time we want to invest in neighborhoods is to gentrify them.
Yep.
And that's not good investment. What that does is displace people. And I'm not saying that, you know, you shouldn't improve neighborhoods because a lot of neighborhoods could use some improving. But, you don't improve them at the expense of people. And if you really want to improve the neighborhood, you should improve it with some serious economic development. Create some jobs that will allow the people who live in this neighborhood the opportunity to fix up their own homes because they have the money.
Yeah.
I mean, just about every neighborhood I've lived in Philadelphia, particularly in places like Northern Liberties and South Philly and stuff, where, you know, you have these old, beautiful Victorian homes and stuff that people got, you know, when they moved here with their husband, you know, after World War II. And, you know, rather than price these people out of their homes, how about putting some economic development in that allows them or their children to make the kind of money that would allow them to keep their home? Because most of these homes that end up going for pennies on the dollar, it's because they're in such bad shape when, you know, people start inquiring about them that, you know, people just want to get out. And you can't get a home equity loan if you're in a place that's being redlined, as the folks from Reveal were kind enough to show us a few months back.
Right.
And, you know, it all becomes this vicious cycle.
Yeah.
And just, you know, kind of, you know, a question for all of the city council members that might be listening to this. There were hearings held a few months back. Councilman Kenyatta Johnson held hearings about the redlining issue and what could be done about it. I'm hoping that during this upcoming city council session, because council starts next week, I'm hoping that during this upcoming city council session that you all actually put out some legislation that would address this problem. And I'm thinking that among the things that legislation should do is penalize banks that redline in our neighborhoods. If we catch you redlining, you can't do business with the city of Philadelphia and its multi-billion dollars that it has in various budgets.
Oh, right. That'd be too much like right.
Yeah, but, you know, I can dream.
Too much like right, yeah.
But
hey,
I can dream.
Listen, Ike Raw is going to be calling in at 8:20.
Mm-hmm.
Formerly one of the co-hosts at Words, Wake Up With Word. Mm-hmm. And good friend and activist here in the city.
Justice for David Jones Coalition.
That's where he burst on the scenes. And he's also one of the hugest Eagle fans. So we'll talk to him about Larry Krasner's decision to indict and have arrested former Officer Powell now.
Mm-hmm.
And get his thoughts on the Eagle season. You can get 2-for-1 out of Ike Raw. If you never heard Ike Raw, get ready, folks, because Ike is all the way raw. Before he comes on, Denise, one last story that I thought you'd find interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So now we know how obsessed Trump was about the fact that he felt that his was, like, larger than Obama's.
What, his inauguration?
Yeah. The size of the crowd, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Which it wasn't, because I was there, and I can tell you. I was in both.
Oh, God bless you. What you do for us?
Hey, it's not just a job. It's
what you
an
do
adventure.
For us. Don't you all know Denise sacrifices for us? I would have never gone to that crap. But, yeah, so The Guardian has a story out. They did a Freedom of Information Act.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that they have confirmed that someone edited and doctored the photographs of Trump's inauguration to make it look bigger than Obama's? I thought people only did that on, like, dating websites.
Or Instagram.
5 heartbeats.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. First of all, whoever did that, they've doctored with a historical record, and they're going to get in trouble for that.
Well, but you know, who should really get in trouble? They did it, you know, trying to make the president feel good about himself.
See, I know that, you know, I've known people with self-esteem issues, but they're generally not the president of the United States.
Well, here, listen. All right, this is a part of the story from The Guardian. Let's see. In this official's view, Spicer's, remember Spicy? Remember Spicy?
How could we forget?
Man, that's the worst thing they ever did, letting him go, because Melissa McCarthy was killing it on Saturday Night Live. Man, I miss that impersonation. But Spicy's request amounted to a request for National Park Service, NPS, to provide photographs in which it appeared the inauguration crowd filled the majority of the space in the photograph. She told investigators that she, too, contacted the NPS photographer to ask for additional shots. The NPS photographer, whose name was also redacted, told investigators he was contacted by an unidentified official who asked for any photographs that showed the inauguration crowd sizes. Having filed 25 photographs on Inauguration Day, he was asked to go back to his office and edit a few more for a second submission. He said he edited the inauguration photographs to make them look more symmetrical by cropping out the sky and cropping out the bottom where the crowd ended, the investigators reported, adding, he said he did so to show that there had been more of a crowd. I'm just saying, we got a guy, you know,
well,
in the White House
who is... Well, actually, he's practicing presidential... They're practicing political advance team 101.
Well, first, so listen, I have cropped photographs out before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a picture at the church, you don't want to... If you got, like empty pews, you don't want that in the scene, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're going to use it for something. So, I mean, I get it in theory. So I guess there's really nothing wrong with that in
well,
and of itself.
Well, except the whole historical record thing notwithstanding.
Well, no, but because the problem is not just the – it's not if that's all you were doing, that's one thing. But you're trying to make an argument that is not true, which is that your crowd was bigger than the crowd at Barack Obama's inauguration.
Which was not.
Which was four times the size.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the original pictures, they're right next to each other. And so the issue is not just simply cropping a photograph to show the inauguration in its best light. The issue is that you are trying to lie and deceive people over something that is so absolutely ridiculous. I mean, how childish is that? But this is the president.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, you know... I when I talk about, you know, going down there for the inauguration and being around some of the most angry victors I've ever been around in my life, I mean, these folks are probably still mad about something. And, you know, what you see is a whole bunch of folks with self-esteem issues. And a narcissist with self-esteem issues
right.
is just a bad combination.
And
it leads to stuff like this.
And it confirms, doesn't confirm, but it does give heightened, it gives support to that anonymous letter,
mm-hmm.
right? That says that you got a White House being run by somebody who, as Omarosa said, I know she's not our favorite person, but her book title is right, Unhinged.
Yeah.
Unhinged from reality.
Mm-hmm.
That here you are, the president, on your first day. All this stuff happened the first week. Your first week in office, you are spending time as president, diverting staff and energy attention to trying to prove something that is fundamentally not true. Your inauguration came nowhere near the size of Obama's. And so what is staff doing when they should be getting ready to fill all those vacant spaces that you have still yet to fill?
Many of whom are still not filled.
So what do you have staff doing instead? Fixing a photograph to go with a lie.
But here's the thing.
Jeez.
But here's the thing. Donald Trump does a lot of the stuff he does to kind of hide other stuff he's doing that's much worse. Yeah. So... He gets us focused on the fact that he is a narcissist with self-esteem issues to kind of keep our eye off the fact that there are still over 500 kids that have not been reunited with their parents, and the administration has decided that they don't really care about not meeting the deadline they were supposed to for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, or the fact that they're trying again to repeal the Affordable Care Act, or the fact that you have this Supreme Court justice that may have lied to Congress in his first confirmation hearing that's up for another confirmation hearing. you know, to be in, on the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And there's all of these other things, you know, that Trump's baser impulses, you know, keep our eyes off the ball on. And while I understand that we have to keep an eye on these baser impulses because they affect the country too, you know, everybody should have their head on a swivel.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what you really need to do, folks, I cannot emphasize this enough, vote.
Vote like your life depends on it.
Because guess what? It does.
Yeah. Hey, shout out to Tanya Brown, mother of Brandon Tate Brown. Mm-hmm. Just posted online, said if our government that is 90% white would care about a plan to rid our communities of the drugs and guns the way they're focusing on this opioid epidemic, it would improve dramatically economically and a healthier environment.
Well, I can't even argue about that.
Pretty much.
Because there are no lies there.
Right. You know, exactly. Why are we spending energy on the person in the White House? We have more important issues in Philadelphia. Dave Lipscomb post.
David, don't be that guy.
Thank you. You beat me to the punch. Because Dave, you're my boy. You're my boy, Dave.
Well, no, I say this to David all the time. Don't be that guy.
I mean,
what I want people, period, to stop doing is acting like people cannot entertain two complex concepts in their brains at once. Because we can. And people of color in particular, we multitask from the womb. So we can do this. I can think about what's going on in D.C. while also focusing on what's happening in Philadelphia, what's happening in New Jersey, what's happening in Delaware. I can do more than one thing, and I'm really darn good at it. So, you know, don't be that guy.
He just replied to you on Facebook. Yeah. He said, I am that guy.
Well, don't be that guy. Stop being that guy.
You're not going to stop him. You have as much choice of changing his mind as I do of changing your mind. He's that guy and you're that lady. That's you too. You guys crack me up. Speaking of a person who can multitask, he's an activist and an Eagles fan, Mr. Ike Raw. But we got to bring him on with his own music. This is to you, Ike Raw. Mr. Ike Raw.
Good morning. That was such a beautiful introduction, Reverend. First of all, let me say good morning to you. Good morning to Miss Denise Clay. Good morning to all the listeners. Yes, good morning to all the Bird Gang fans. As you seen last night, we had a small obstacle. I say small because it was really small. It was tiny, but I'm going to say small because it's Friday. The Atlanta Falcons decided to come back to Broad Street again, and you seen what happened. We had Falcons for dinner, and that's what happened. They cannot score an offensive touchdown. Our defense is the best defense in the league. You guys seen it. This is what's going to happen throughout the year, so get used to it. Ike Raw, bang, bang, Bird Gang. So let's get it. We 1-0. Everybody else is 0-0, and the Atlanta Falcons is 0-1. So let's get it. Good morning.
Let me apologize to the listeners for not introducing you all to Ike Raw sooner. Let me just apologize. It's been too long, Ike. Man, miss you, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Listen, it's been a great week. It's been a beautiful week, but a lot of people tell me that I don't pronounce beautiful the right way. They say it's beautiful, something like that, but I say beautiful. So it's been a beautiful week. The killer cop, Ryan Powell, now was arrested Tuesday. We'll get into that as well. He's been crying all week in jail. It's a really sad sight what this man has been doing in jail. He's been crying in prison. He's in protective custody. It's really sad what goes on with these killer cops when they're arrested. Now he's in jail. He wants his family. But think about the families, you know, that you've taken from their loved ones. You've taken away. So we don't care about you crying, Ryan Powell, now. We don't care about your wife crying. We don't care about your kids crying, none of that. We care about the family of David Jones, the family of Carnell Williams Carney, and all the families that you destroyed in the city of Philadelphia.
Wow.
Wow.
Ike Raw. I told you Ike keeps it 100 all the time.
Absolutely.
It has been a good week for you. Eagles 1-0 and Ryan Pownall in jail.
Yeah, Ryan Pownall's in jail right now. Let me see what time it is. It's about 8:30, so maybe they're trotting the trade through a slot because when you're in protective custody, Ref, you're 23-1. You're locked out in your cell 23 hours a day, which is really bad. Yeah. So then they slide your trade through a slot. So right now he's probably debating on whether or not he wants to eat that breakfast that comes in that brown slot. It's really nasty, Ref. They've been sliding it through the slots for about 20 years. You put your food on there. You don't know where the food comes from. So, Ryan, if you're listening right now, I would advise you to eat the breakfast because you'll get hungry later on. Fat John McNesby will not be able to send you food. He will not be able to send you breakfast. The FOP can't help you out. So, Ryan, have a good breakfast.
Hey, Heike, how do you think the guards are? Because you know there's a lot of folk in there who the guards and the cops are not always on the same page. How do you think they're feeling about Ryan right now?
Oh, let me just tell you right now. Shout out to the correctional officers at Corinne Farm Hole Correctional Facility. That's where Ryan Pownall is in our house today, 7901 State Road, Philly, PA 19136. Anybody want to write him a letter of, just to say what type of disgusting individual he is? Trust me, you can do that. But the COs, they do not have respect. They do not take kindly to child molesters. They do not take kindly to killer cops. They do not take kindly to people who, commit crimes against the elderly. I've been in CFCF plenty of times, housed myself, so I can tell you this. This is how it goes down. So for Ryan Pownall now, it's going to be a sad, sad time for him until maybe, he gets bail, gets his charges dropped, and then he's allowed to get bail. But until now, he has no bail. He's in jail where he should have been in 2010 when he shot Carnell Williams Kearney. Mm-hmm. But because we had some DAs in Philadelphia who didn't want to do their job like our great DA does, Larry Krasner, that's the problem. You allow this killer to still be on the streets and shoot black men in the back, and that's what happens. So now he has to pay for his crimes. But the COs, they have no sympathy for Mr. Powell now. I'll tell you that right now. No sympathy.
So when you heard about the indictment, because I remember I got the press release in my inbox, and I'm like, okay, what are you announcing? And then you go to the press conference and you find it is an indictment. That doesn't happen a lot in Philadelphia. In fact, I think this is only the second time it's happened. So I guess, how did you feel when you got the word that this indictment was coming down?
Well, I mean, I'm not to sound arrogant or nothing like that, but I always believed that this police officer would be arrested for what he did. On June 8th, 2017, I'm sitting in my basement, minding my business, watching the news. It was breaking news. How can you shoot a black man? And I didn't even know he was black, Hispanic, whatever his, race was. It didn't matter to me. I just knew that I seen someone getting shot in their back when they were not creating, a problem for an officer. They were running away. So I always knew this day would come. A lot of people were on Larry Krasner. I was too, saying, hey, Larry, what's taking so long? You have police officers getting charged in, Pittsburgh. You have police officers getting charged in the other areas of Pennsylvania. And Larry said, hey, I want to make sure that we have a solid case. I don't just want to charge him and have him beat the case like many other police have done in the country. So that's what happened. So when I heard the news, to be honest with you, I was real excited. I was real happy. I'm still excited right now, but it's not over because we need the conviction. Charging the officer is great. We do, we appreciate what Larry did, absolutely. But we need the conviction. So we need a jury of how they say his peers or whatever it may be, or we need a judge to convict this man, to listen to the evidence, watch the video, and convict this man and put him in jail like the rest of the killers in Philadelphia are in jail right now.
Now, in terms of the judge, because the last time a police officer was indicted for killing a citizen officer, Christopher DePasquale, the case never went to court because the judge threw it out. Do you think that this will actually make it to trial? Because, the preliminary hearing is September 19th, but it's got to go to trial in order for there to be a conviction.
Right, absolutely. I mean, when we hit the preliminary, there's no reason that this case won't go to trial. Denise, you have to understand, what we have here is video. You know what I mean?
Hey, Ike. Yeah, we're getting a lot of wind in your phone.
I'm sorry, I walked my son to school, but I thought
my man, aww, holding it down. Look at him, holding it down.
Good morning, how you doing? I'm on the phone with Reverend Denise.
Love Ike Raw.
Yeah, I watched the Eagles last night.
Yeah, I miss those days, Denise.
Every morning. I'm sorry.
I remember when I was walking my daughter to school one day when she was still in elementary. And I kind of knew this was going to be one of the last days I'd be actually walking her to school. And I just looked at her. She said, oh, Dad, don't get all sentimental. I'll still be around. Miss those days. Hold it down, Ikey Raw.
Yeah, absolutely. He's fourth grade. He's in the fourth grade now. This is Solace Cohen Elementary School.
Man. So,
no, he's still here.
Very good. So, Ikey, let me ask you about voting. Because so you and I, we know each other. So last year when you voted in the DA's race, was that really your first time ever casting a vote?
Yeah, it was, right? Absolutely. And you know, that's why a lot of people don't understand how, you know, personal this was for me. Because when I got a chance to look Larry in his eyes, you know, before he even was elected, and, you know, he told me, you know, what his agenda was, what he wanted to do. I never had the opportunity, just like many people in Philly, you never have an opportunity to sit down with a potential district attorney and have them tell you what they really want to do and look you in the eyes. And so when I talked to him, that's what made me get behind what he was doing, because I knew he was sincere and I knew he was going to make change that people weren't used to, change that people wanted. And, you know, here we are. So that's what happens.
Man, that's incredible. That's incredible. Well,
and you know,
yeah,
I did canvassing for Larry. I had people voting for Larry. I told people, and, you know, a lot of people, some decisions as far as, you know, not seeking a death penalty with the two young men who killed the cop. That's what he ran on. He said, you know, he opposes the death penalty. So, hey, it is what it is. But, I mean, you know, some people are upset because they say, hey, well, you know, they killed the cop. Why shouldn't they die? And, you know, I'm not going to get too deep, but I'll pose the same questions, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Reverse it, vice versa. Why shouldn't a cop get the death penalty if he kills someone? So everybody gets, you know, oh, my God, you want a cop to die? Let's say, hey, why do you want these two black men to die? I mean, come on, let's talk about it.
Good point. Wow. All right. Well, look, man, we're going to let – I know you got your son getting into school and all that, man. We'll get you back. We'll actually get you here in studio sometime soon. Now we're back in the NFL season. You're going to be our NFL correspondent. You'll be our man on the streets, Eagle recap every week, all right?
Absolutely. Ikey Raw is a man of the people. Everybody knows I'm around. I haven't went anywhere. I will be out here fighting for justice and doing what I have to do until they take me out of here. So that's what I'm going to do. Whoever don't like it, so what? I'm Ikey Raw. I won't change. I want change. I don't want fame.
All right, Ikey Raw.
Well, thank you, Ikey.
Have a good one, man. We'll talk to you.
All right, so absolutely. Have a good weekend.
You too.
All right.
That's my man.
How the heck do you follow that?
You don't. You don't. Now that we're back in the NFL season, got to have Ikey Raw back on.
And also, he does like Facebook Lives after
listen,
Eagles games. And we can't play those because
it's unedited.
The FCC would not take kindly.
It is. That's where you discover, well, why is he Ikey Raw? Go to Facebook Live. You'll be like, oh, I can't go there. But seriously, you know, and so Ikey actually, he and Flood followed us on Wake Up With Word. And so that's why we couldn't get him on sooner, because he was still doing that show. But now that he's free from that, we tend to get him back on. But, you know, his story is one that has to be told as well. You know, there's a big problem that we continue to hear, Denise. I continue to hear this around voting. So in our generation, you know, what kind of motivates people is when you start telling the stories of people, what happened to people in the 50s and 60s, people who died, people who were bombed, people who were hung, people who had to move out of the South for just trying to register people to vote, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you hear, like, millennials and those who are younger say, those stories don't mean anything to me, and that doesn't give me a reason to go vote.
You know, I was thinking about this on my ride in this morning. I was thinking about not voting and third parties and all this other stuff this morning as I'm driving down the street. And sometimes we, as members of the group that W.E.B. Du Bois termed the talented 10th, we don't recognize our privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this because a lot of the stuff that people told me for why they weren't voting or why they were voting for a third party or all these other different things came, at least to me, came from a place of knowing that no matter what the baser impulses of this administration are, they're never going to affect me.
Mm.
And, you know, I could have feasibly said some of that. I mean, I am a college-educated woman who is on the outside of childbearing age. So there's a lot of things that would have affected me in my 30s and 40s that don't affect me now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things that do affect me, like I take the whole pre-existing conditions argument real seriously.
Yeah.
Because it's me. And, you know, the thing is, at some point we need to understand that when it comes to voting, we can't just vote for ourselves. We have to vote for people who aren't ourselves. I mean, it may benefit us, but there are other people who would benefit more. Like, for me to, you know, vote to help keep Planned Parenthood open, that's not a service I normally use. But if I'm a poor woman who needs birth control and I can't, because I already have 3 kids and I don't want a 4th, then, you know, that's why I vote. Or if I may not live in a neighborhood where, you know, there's crime and violence and stuff, but I know people who do, mm-hmm. and I want them safe. Or I may not have ever had, well, actually, I have had confrontations with police, which is why I always, you know, have somebody on the phone whenever I get pulled over, just in case some shenanigans happen. But I don't know the pain of my kid being shot. I mean, I know the pain of being a teacher and seeing the students that I used to teach getting shot by cops. But I don't know the pain of being a parent that has to bury a child mm-hmm. because my kid was running around on a dirt bike and a cop decided to shoot him in the back.
But you're right on it, though. When you talk about the whole idea of privilege, right, and that we don't want to acknowledge our own privilege. And that's what I was saying to people as well who took what you just said to the next level, because you didn't use that as an excuse not, you know, to say, well, I'm not going to vote. You know, Hillary is not the candidate who's ideal, so she's not pristine, and I'm certainly not going to vote for Trump. So I'm just not going to vote at all because my person didn't get in. And that's what I heard a lot of with persons who are Bernie supporters, with the whole idea of, you know, we're just going to shut it down or we're not going to turn out. You know, you can say that when, you know, your life is not on the line and the things that are most important to you are not on the line. And when you get down to it, I mean, look, you're right. We're in a place where fundamentally my, you know, so, you know, your money, your situation has not changed dramatically mm-hmm. under a Trump administration
mm-hmm.
versus what it would have been under Hillary. But we're not the majority of the people.
Right. That does not necessarily, I mean,
right.
The boys termed it the talented 10th for a reason.
Right.
And that was because at the time that he conceived this, which he later walked back because he realized that, you know, the whole myth of the talented 10th, which was supposed to be uplifting the other 90%, wasn't necessarily going on because any group of people that can segregate itself tends to. You know, there's a certain privilege I have.
Yeah.
I mean, I have this degree in journalism that I may want to use for journalism, but I can use it for just about anything else because I have that credential.
Mm-hmm.
And that means there's certain doors that are open to me that aren't necessarily open to everybody else. And I'm not saying that we have to take other people into consideration because I'm being condescending or paternalistic or anything. What I'm saying is folks talk a lot about unity. Mm-hmm. And we kind of have to look at the collective. And, you know, if you look at the collective, for all of us who are doing okay or actually very well, there are a whole bunch of us who are getting our butts kicked.
Well, that's the point, right? So you're talking about being in the city where 26% of the population lives in poverty.
And I will never understand that. I will never understand that statistic and how it is allowed to continue when you've got apartment buildings going up in South Philly on South Broad Street right now mm-hmm. where they're going to have the nerve to look you in the face and say $1,300 a month for a doggone efficiency.
Right. And 39% of children living in poverty in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And you have rents that are skyrocketing, as you just pointed out. You have very little affordable new housing going up. and then the gap between those who have and those who have not is not closing. That gap is exploding wide open. Where a good job in Philly is if you can make $10 an hour, right?
Mm-hmm.
No benefits, no days off. That's considered a good job, right? And so, I mean, yeah, so, yeah, you're right. I mean, so the question is not what's going to happen to the minority of people in the community, but it's what's going to happen, what's in the best interest of the majority. And so you have to, so, I mean, the idea that somehow I can just sit out an election because, you know, it's not quite my choice. But you're going to still be able to afford your $5 drink at Starbucks now that you're going back in your, or at Uncle Bobby's or whatever.
Now, to tell you just how important it is for folks to act as a collective, I just got a press release for a press conference that's going on at 10 o'clock this morning. A group of regional leaders representing 217,000 students are having a press conference talking about deteriorating school buildings. If you've noticed, most of the week, the students in Philadelphia schools – they've been back at school, but they haven't been back at school because they've been trying to, you know, not spontaneously combust because you're in a centuries-old building with no air conditioning and it's like 9 million degrees outside.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't know, and I didn't notice because I'm not following education as closely as I used to, the PlanCon system that the state used to reimburse school districts for either, you know, upgrading or building new school buildings had been shut down. And I didn't know that because under the PlanCon system, what you could do is you could build a school or, you know, rebuild a school and the state would reimburse you for a really significant percentage of it. So that way, A, it didn't beat up your taxpayers too bad.
Mm-hmm.
And B, you know, the kids got a good school to go to and try to learn it. And my guess is that as part of the state's impetus to not pay its fair share for education, This went by the wayside. So now on this group of legislators that includes like Councilwoman Helen Gim, Senate Appropriations Chair Vincent Hughes, and other people, they're all getting together today to talk about how this needs to change. And Dwight Evans is introducing a bill that would, you know, give schools money to upgrade their facilities to include air conditioning. But in some cases, air conditioning isn't going to be enough.
Well, first of all, yeah, and I agree. But in the interim, before you get to that, because that's going to take a lot of time and money, and even if you get the money, a lot of time to implement, you know, I'm hoping that the district and that the superintendent of schools in Philadelphia is going to reconsider trying to start school again next year as early as they did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we first started, Denise, honestly, the public schools back 10 years ago didn't even start the week of Labor Day. They started the following week, the week after Labor Day. And I didn't quite understand it back then. It seemed like it was late to me. But now going through this heat wave, it's like, that's why.
Because
you can't go into these schools at the end of August. It's still too hot. I mean, take it from somebody whose sanctuary does not have air conditioning, you know.
Now, the idea behind this is to provide more instructional time for, you know, for the students. But the thing is, you can't really provide more instructional time if you walk into a classroom and the air is so hot and stifling that all you're thinking about is, gosh, I'm hot.
Denise, the kids have done nothing in school for the last 2 weeks. They've been in school 2 weeks, and of the 2 weeks they've been in school, so today will be a full day, and the first day was a full day.
Mm-hmm.
The balance of the time, all of last week with the exception of one day, all of this week with the exception of one day, were half days because of the heat. And one was already planned because of instructional professional development for the teachers, slash they want to be out early for the Labor Day weekend on that Friday. But it was still too hot to do a full day anyway. So my point, though, is that, you know, and sometimes people can get very locked in and rigid into how you want to run something. And I understand Dr. Hyde has a passion for our kids, which is what I truly admire. You know, he really is about the education of young people and has a plan that he thinks. But, you know, sometimes you got to work with what you got, mm-hmm. not with what you think you have. And you don't have – it's like the wintertime when they want to keep schools open. It's like this city is not a flat city, right? You have hills like Roxborough, Mount Airy, Chestnut Hill. And if you try to send buses out and kids out in that stuff in the snow and ice, you're asking for trouble. And so sometimes you have to just kind of give in. And I'm hoping that, you know, next year the schedule will reflect one that takes into account the climate. It has been a waste of time the last 2 weeks.
And you know, it goes back to what the whole idea of this was, which was more instructional time. So they right. still didn't get
they
more
did
instructional time. And
20-minute classes.
Wow.
20-minute classes. You get in, take your books out. The teacher's like, yeah. All right, see you. We'll really start this when the weather breaks.
And the thing is, having taught high school, you can't do anything in 20 minutes.
No.
You can't even really take attendance in 20 minutes.
Man.
And much less, you know, provide any noteworthy instruction. And, you know, I was teaching a media arts class.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the stuff that we did in my class required like time, like as much time as we could get. Like I would take the students out to Bartram Gardens and have them photograph things and different stuff like that. And that takes time because you got to get everybody together. You got to make sure the people ain't acting stupid before you walk out the door. Then you got to go to Bartram's Garden, and you gotta, you know, get every, you know, make sure that everybody has the assignment and send them off to take the pictures, and then you gotta gather them all up. And if you've ever tried to herd a bunch of high school students that you have outside back inside, you know that herding cats is easier and a lot less frustrating. Then
right.
you got to get them back in. And because we had a policy at the school I taught in that students were not allowed to have their phones on them during the day, I had to get special dispensation to allow my students to use their cell phones to take these pictures, which meant I had to collect all the cell phones, and people would try to hide them from me. And I'm like, please don't make me have to pat you down, because I will. And you got to go through all that. And maybe if you're lucky, you've gotten like half an hour, 45 minutes of actual instruction time.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is spent, you know, getting the logistics of instruction together.
Right.
So right. having a 20-minute class, I would probably just say, okay, we have 20 minutes. Do whatever homework you have for your next class, because I can't do anything for you.
Pretty much. Hey, well, listen, we got about 10 minutes before we get out of here. Phone line is open, 888-329-3306, 888-329-3306. I know we had a few problems with our screen. Someone was trying to call in. If you want to get back, it's open now. A few last stories, Denise. Twitter has permanently banned Alex Jones of InfoWars. They took the suspension to a permanent ban.
You got to work real hard to get banned from Twitter. The only other person I know that's banned from Twitter is Milo Yiannopoulos, and he earned that ban. So I'm of two minds about that.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, yeah, I don't think that you should be allowed to go around spreading your conspiracy theories, because the way that you do it is hurtful. But on the other hand, you know, I'm also a freedom of speech girl.
But freedom of speech, you can't just, I mean, it's Twitter is public, but it's not public.
Yeah, it's a private company. And I think that that's where people get stuck, because they're like, right. oh, well, you know, this is a violation of the First Amendment. It is, and yet it isn't.
Right. I mean, like our churches, we open it up to the public, but it's a private place. So you can't just come in there and say what you want.
Mm-hmm.
You get run out of there.
Yeah, it is, and yet it isn't.
So, you know.
But the interesting thing that I found about Alex Jones yesterday is that he's only 44 years old.
Oh, well, he's got future. He can actually be president one day.
No, but I looked at him and I'm like, you know, and I don't mean to be like you know, someone who, you know, judges people on their looks, because I don't. But no. I've come to the conclusion that hate ages you. It does. Being hateful and deceitful and all of that stuff, it ages you.
Wow, and this guy is 44.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It ages you. It's like, you know, like when Sarah Huckabee Sanders turned 36. I was like, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is 36. And everybody looked at me like, no, she isn't. Yes, she is.
Wow.
And I'm like, lying must take something out of you.
He can't be 44.
He's 44.
We're like that much older than him?
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
And I was like, this, yeah. I said, lying obviously ages you.
Well,
or
apparently
being,
it does.
Or conspiracy theories or any of the number of things. I mean, I remember back when I was covering white supremacist groups.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the oldest looking people I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
And that's because, you know, the stress of hate, of being that hateful,
yeah,
it weighs down on you.
All right. Well, hey, let's go to the phone line real quick. We got Kelly holding. Kelly, what's happening? Welcome to Mark and Denise Mark. In the Mornings.
This is Kelly Green. We went to Odell together.
I thought that was Kelly Green. I saw you. She was posting. She remembers creased 501 jeans.
That just should not be.
You know, Facebook is a beautiful and a bad thing, but I love it. You know, I get up early or I can't sleep or whatever, and I listen to you guys, and I don't always post, but I love you guys' dynamic.
Well, thank
and
you.
And I love what you guys talk about.
Man, thank you,
I really
Kelly.
Do.
Now, are you still in the Bay?
Well, I live in Vegas now.
Okay.
But... Thank you, guys. Really.
Well, thank you.
We appreciate it. You know, well, thank you. Thank you for that. And so Kelly, have you been following, I was going to ask you about Kamala Harris. Have you ever had a chance to meet her?
Oh, Kamala.
Yeah.
It's Kamala.
Kamala.
Yes.
Thank
she's,
you.
Yes, I've met her several times. She's real cool.
Yeah, I was, so we didn't get a chance to talk about that yet, Denise, but she was, I don't know if either of you saw her part of.
She was coming for him, and they got mad, saying it was inappropriate questions. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, she went at Brett Kavanaugh's neck.
Well, you know, let's be honest. The questions that she was
asking.
She's
a real one.
Yeah, and the questions that she was asking are truly legitimate questions, because they are going to come up before the Supreme Court when and if Robert Mueller issues Donald Trump a subpoena. And let's keep it real. The only reason why Kavanaugh was suggested was appointed to this seat was because of his feelings on presidential on whether or not the president should be investigated. Those are that's the only reason that he was appointed to this seat, because basically he said what Donald Trump wanted to hear about whether or not the president should have to honor a subpoena.
And Feinstein asked him, do you think a sitting president should be subpoenaed? He's like, blah, 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 blah.
Meanwhile, you got a big old record that says no. Unless of course that president is Bill Clinton, in which case not only is it okay to subpoena him, but it's okay to ask him some really sexually inappropriate questions.
Okay, no. No, they did just subpoena him. They didn't even ask him things that really, to me, between him and his wife, mm-hmm. they impeached him.
Mm-hmm.
For real?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care who my president sleeps with.
Yeah.
Are you doing your job?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, if
nobody ever asked what Kennedy did.
Oh, well, Kennedy should be happy he wasn't around during social media.
Yeah.
Trust
me. But the paparazzi, there wasn't a paparazzi then.
Yeah.
It was a different mindset.
Man, no doubt.
The media was different. But Roosevelt did a whole bunch of dirty stuff. But it was never in the news.
Well, right. You're talking about the American presidency. I mean, but you're right. And I mean, but listen, but here's the difference. With this president, this is the real problem. The things that we actually know would have gotten any of those other presidents impeached or by or out of shame, they would have just gone away. I mean, the Access Hollywood video, tape alone, if that had come out on any other candidate who actually had this thing that we call shame, you know, they would have...
Bag it up. We've never had a president that had been married several times that filed personal and business bankruptcy multiple times.
Yeah.
All your shit on page six. Excuse my language.
Oops.
I mean, you know, it's no.
It's not just me.
It's not just me. It's something about we don't have a filter.
Okay.
You just got us like dinged. Thanks, Kelly, for
this
nothing.
This never, ever, ever happened. Before, presidents were, quote unquote, clean. I mean, they weren't, but they look like, you know, on paper. Yeah. No.
Right, right.
He's been dirt day one. He's been doing dirt all the time.
Yeah. Well, as Denise said, the Republicans have made a deal with the devil.
Oh, yeah.
So that they
he's getting paid.
So that they, if, because they want what they want, they're willing to put up with something that they, you're right. I mean, look, now, as a Democrat, he could have probably still gotten elected with all those issues because Democrats, to your point, what
well,
you said
yeah,
about
Well, yeah, because Russia got the best hacks in the world.
Right. So, yeah. All right, Kelly, I'm out of time anyway. Man, I'm glad to talk to you, my old school homie.
Sorry.
That's all right. Have a good one.
Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's who posted bye-bye. About Jordache and Sassoon's.
Mm-hmm. And I'm still, like, really
Gloria,
not feeling the whole creasing thing.
Gloria Vanderbilt. But, you know, but listen, but she's right, though. I mean, listen, I mean, that's, look, the total hypocrisy of this, when the story is completely written, is, look, the kind of things that he has done, these are not things that, by and large, were really important to Democrats. Democrats were not, are not the party that talks about somebody being married multiple times being an issue. That's not a deal breaker for Democrats. That's a deal breaker for Republicans, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who have to go to the moral majority and prove that you're, you know, that, as she said, you're clean. You know, the Access Hollywood tape probably wouldn't have killed them with Dems. But for Republicans, you guys are the ones who, you know, you're holding. I mean, remember, you want Kavanaugh because you want to bring morality back to the country. I'm just saying, you have to justify this. As a Democrat, I'm just telling you,
Okay. Let me throw something out there that's truly immoral for all of our morality folks.
Yeah.
The Vietnam War, after the Vietnam War, you had a whole bunch of people who came here as refugees because they were fighting.
Came to Oakland.
Yeah, they were fighting the regime and were being persecuted and stuff. So they came here as refugees because, you know, basically we went and messed up their country. Because ICE is not having enough fun deporting people from south of the border, they are now coming after these refugees, despite the fact that they were told that anyone that came here prior to 1995 would never have to be deported. And this is affecting 9,000 people right now.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Mostly in California, I'm sure.
Yes.
They came to Oakland.
Because
I remember it.
Because the story's in the L.A. Times.
Oh, man.
So, you know, folks need to remember Reverend Niemoller. You know, first they came for this group, but I didn't say anything because I wasn't a member of that group.
First they came for the communists.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't speak up.
Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to speak up because they've already come after the folks south of the border. They're going to start, they've come after Haitians. They've come after all these other different folks, and now they're coming after the Vietnamese, and eventually they are going to get to your group. We need to say something. We need to do something.
All right. Hey, folks, listen, that's all we got for today and this week. Glad to be with you. If you want to find out what happened this week, which you can't do when you're black, go back and listen to the podcast because we're now at double X going to YYNZZ. Unfortunately, looking forward to being with you on Monday. Have a great weekend. Shout out to Mike on the board, Leslie taking care of our social media, and to all of you on behalf of Mark and Denise in the Mornings. We're out.
Have a good day, everybody. Have a great weekend.